be seated, please. The court is ready to hear argument in 060979 Sonat Exploration Company versus Cud Pressure Control.
May it please the court, Mr. Tholander and Mr. Baxter will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Tholander will open with the first 15 minutes. Mr. Baxter will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. As time permits, I will address both petitions filed in this case, starting with the choice of law issues raised in Sonat's petition, and then turning to the issues raised in Cud's petition. Concerning choice of law, the court's analysis should be guided by two principles. The first is the need to focus on the issue in dispute, an indemnity agreement. The court is presented with the choice between the Oil Field Indemnity Acts of Texas and Louisiana, both of which are designed to prevent inequitable. The question is whether the Texas Act should apply to this agreement that was prepared and executed in Texas and performable in Texas when injured Texans sued Sonat in Texas.
What is the dispute about where Cud is domiciled?
Your Honor, there was conflicting evidence in the record. There was evidence that Cud's website listed Houston as its Texas principal place of business, and its records with the Texas Secretary of State listed Texas as principal place of business. There was an affidavit filed in this case that said it was Louisiana. There's also evidence that there were affidavits in other cases in which Cud claimed the principal place of business in Oklahoma and Georgia as well.
Where is it? I mean, doesn't have a headquarters? I'll ask them, I guess.
Yeah. I can tell you that the volume 2, 574. There's an affidavit there which explains it in some detail and basically says that they Cud has an accounting office in Oklahoma, but no senior management there at all. The trial court did not make a finding on that particular issue, and the Court of Appeals didn't either.
I'm a little confused. Did the parties try in exhibits A and B to the MSA to comply with both Texas and Louisiana law? Was that the point?
I think that's exactly the point, Your Honor. It was a belt and suspenders approach. It was we want indemnity. That's clear. We both agree for indemnity. There's an understanding that in Louisiana that's a problem. Now, they didn't select Louisiana law. Why that is, I'm not entirely sure, but I assume the reason is because Louisiana law may be favorable in some circumstances, but not in others. So that, you know, with the recognition that under other circumstances, given the facts that may arise, it's certainly possible a suit in Louisiana with a Louisiana court applying Louisiana choice of law principles would apply Louisiana law, and then the parties would
if
have
their Louisiana law. There's no indemnity.
That's right, Your Honor.
And well, so there's if you want indemnity, there's no reason to pick Louisiana law, even if you're drilling in Louisiana.
That's exactly right. As to an indemnity provision, I think that's right.
Well, that's the part I'm confused about, because it looks to me like if the parties had done what Exhibit B says, they would have effectively had indemnity. Is that true or not?
That was the lawsuit, Your Honor, that was dismissed, but Cud had an obligation to bill Sonat as an additional insured for any work in Louisiana, and a judge created exception for the Louisiana statute, which says that basically you can come in as an insured, even though you can't get indemnity from Cud, we would have an action against Lumbermans as an additional insured.
But that's effectively the same as indemnity, is it or not?
It could get you to the same point. That's exactly right.
And that's what Exhibit B said. It said you don't, you know, indemnity may not be enforceable in Texas either if you don't comply with the Act.
That's right.
But part of B was to comply with the Act in Texas, and the rest of B was to comply with the Act in Louisiana. Is that right?
That's right. The exhibit B provision that Lumbermans talks about was specifically directed to work in Louisiana. That's correct.
And now, so if the parties had gotten the insurance that B calls for, you would have effectively had indemnity in Louisiana.
I think that's right.
Not from CUD.
What's that? Not from CUD. That's right.
You wouldn't have had. It's just
we wouldn't.
Does the Louisiana case say anything other than you can get insurance in Louisiana? I mean, by paying for a policy and adding it, really, you're just getting indemnity against an insurance company.
That's right.
Which is the same as just getting insurance. I suppose even in Louisiana, you can get insurance.
You're exactly right, Your Honor. And I was answering in terms of, as a practical matter, that's true. But looking at the facts in this case, it actually makes a dispositive difference, which is why Lumbermen's intervened in the first place. So I do think it's very important.
Well, just so I understand, mm-hmm. to get indemnity in Texas, it's got to be backed up by insurance.
That's right. Well, there has to be an agreement.
Right.
In Kent Patrolment, it says there's an agreement to provide insurance.
Right.
So we clearly have that. There's no question that is being complied with. Now, I would say, since we're talking about the choice of law, I think it's critical to understand that under the restatement, especially in when you're talking about contracts, the restatement is very concerned with protecting the expectations of the parties. And the relevant rules quoted in the briefs are from the most relevant is Restatement Section 200, which provides that the validity of a contractual provision should be sustained whenever possible, provided that in so doing the interests of a state with a materially greater interest are not seriously infringed. That means the question here, even if the court decides, you know what, the parties intended for Louisiana law to apply to this agreement, then even if the court decides that, the question that doesn't answer the question. The question is then, well, okay, does Louisiana, given that Louisiana invalidates the indemnity agreement, does Louisiana have a materially greater interest in the indemnity dispute, and would Louisiana's interest be seriously infringed by application of Texas law to that dispute?
But before you, I want you to talk about that. But the premise I'm still concerned about, which is, you know, you read this and you think, well, why didn't the parties pick a law? You just wonder if they didn't think about it or what. But it looked to me as I read it all through that by the time you get to the end of it, if the parties had done what they said they were going to do, it didn't make any difference what law applied. They were going to get to the same end in Louisiana, Texas, no matter what.
And, Your Honor, that is the point of the belt and suspenders argument. I think that was the point. Now, as things have turned out, SONAT is caught in the middle here, and we've sort of lost both agreements because of the Rule 11 agreement with
well,
CUD.
Well, yeah, but you let that one go. Let that one go on purpose.
That's right. That one's gone for us. But we still have...
So it's clear the parties intended in this circumstance for CUD to indemnify, either through insurance or otherwise, to indemnify SONAT. If Louisiana law applies, they don't get indemnified, and the reason is because they let go of the other lawsuit.
That's right. If that's what the court decides that Louisiana law applies here, then we will lose that the indemnity against Lumbermen's and CUD, those claims. Now, I think the belt and suspenders approach, that point is important because Lumbermen's argument is essentially that the existence of suspenders proves there's no belt. And they want to say because we agreed to this additional insured provision, then you just read the indemnity agreement out of the contract. But if you read actually CUD's petition, it makes very clear that CUD understands that the Exhibit A indemnity promise was applicable to work performed in Louisiana. Says so as much in CUD's petition. So the court is really faced with the question of whether this indemnity agreement is going to be upheld or struck down. Now, going back to the point about the expectations of the parties and whether or not. So given that Louisiana law will strike down this indemnity agreement, then the question is, under what circumstances should Louisiana law be applied? And the answer under the restatement is it shouldn't be applied unless Louisiana has a materially greater interest, and those interests would be seriously infringed by application of Texas law to the statute. Now, there's no dispute among the parties or the Court of Appeals that the policies are congruent. And basically, the underlying policy is to prevent inequitable bargaining. And here, that interest just is not implicated in any way. In fact, Cudd's argument, which I'll address in a moment, is that Sonat was too lenient at the bargaining table because they asked for a reduction in coverage and we agreed to it. So there's no implication of that Louisiana's interest will be infringed by application of Texas law here. So I think really on that basis alone, the court can decide to apply Texas law to this agreement. I wanted to point out, just so that there's no confusion, Sonat's position is not that the place of performance is absolutely dispositive and that once you decide that issue, that's it. The court still needs to go through the Section 188 and Section 6 factors, which is done in Sonat's briefing. But I think when you do that, it'll be clear that Texas has a more substantial relationship.
Is the place of performance of an indemnity where you defend the lawsuit filed by the workers, or is it where you pay the indemnity agreement? Is it the lawsuit with the workers, or is it the lawsuit between the two of you all? I know it's the same in this case,
right.
but if it's not.
Right. I mean, my answer is it is the same here, so that's easy. I think typically it would probably where you asked for defense and it was refused. That's a breach of the contract.
But Maxis
there.
Seems to say.
I think that's right. To the extent that there another case comes up where it's split, I think the reality is the restatement realizes that contacts can shift. And so, you know, depending on the particular facts in a case, that issue might be less important. That contact might be less important if there's a real question about whether the performance was at the defense side or at the actual payment side.
And but I think what I wonder about that, though, is if suppose you sued each other in both states the same day, one filed a suit for indemnity, the other filed a suit for declaratory judgment, each in a different state. Ideally, the courts are going to pick the law that should, in some sort of jurisprudential sense, apply to the case. But if it's just the law of the forum, it's going to depend on which case goes forward.
And Your Honor, that's why it's not just the law of the forum. And in these facts, it's pretty clear that if both courts apply the restatement, which you kind of need to assume that, but if both courts apply the restatement, then they would look at the interests and they would say if one state's law is going to invalidate that agreement and one is going to uphold it, then we need really good evidence that this state's interests are greater and would be seriously infringed in order to apply that law. So I think it's very easy to imagine a scenario where you could have your scenario, but both states would still choose Texas law. In fact, I would point the court to a just released decision from Louisiana, King v. Miller, 970 Southern 2nd 703. It's a Louisiana Court of Appeals case that just came out. And there, actually, the well and the indemnity suit were both in Louisiana. The court said that because there was no inequitable bargaining implicated at all, that Texas' interest in upholding the agreement outweighed Louisiana's interest in invalidating it. So I think that's, to the extent the court is somewhat concerned about Louisiana's reaction to a decision that Texas law should apply here, I think that case can assuage the court's consent. If I could turn very quickly to Cudd's arguments. Cudd's first argument is that the agreement is not mutual because Sonat agreed to reduce the scope of Cudd's indemnity exposure by not requiring Cudd to indemnify Sonat's other third-party contractors, which included Brookswell Servicing and Halliburton in this case. Now, that argument is inconsistent with legislative intent. Ken Petroleum held that there were two principal intentions for this act. One was to permit enforcement to the extent of mutuality, and the second was to prevent overreaching. Now, the statute does not require parties to push coverage to the full extent permissible under the definition. And I know that because Section 127.005B says that you can only enforce the agreement to the extent of mutual coverage. So it envisions the possibility that parties will carve out coverages from the sort of universe permitted by the definition. Second, the legislature could not have required a small contractor without any contractors of its own to agree to indemnify a host of third-party contractors, could include large companies like Halliburton, in order to secure indemnity for itself.
And you think we should address these issues rather than send them back to the Court of Appeals?
Your Honor, the court has granted both petitions, and I think that SONAT has no objection to getting this case completely resolved at this point. CUD's second issue about the evidence of insurance, the key point here is that there was no dispute concerning whether SONAT had more insurance than CUD. In fact, as CUD well knew, SONAT's insurance had paid out already more than $100 million to settle the claims brought by CUD's and Brooks' employees. So that's why there was never any question about whether or not SONAT had more insurance than CUD. It was completely resolved.
Any further questions, counsel? The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Gunn will present argument for the respondent. Mr. Landry will present argument for the intervener. Mr. Gunn will present the first 10 minutes of argument.
If I could start with the question Judge Heck just asked about the decision tree. Let's be honest, this is a complicated, twisted fact pattern. And I want to go away, leaving the court with one message today, which is to tell you what I want, what I'm asking you to do, and why. And even to be so bold as to say, here's how I think the opinion ought to read if you rule for me, which is, never mind what you just heard about choice of law and what you're about to hear. Just render a take nothing on my Texas law point, on my no evidence point. The reason I'm asking for that, and I'll tell you how I want to do that, let me tell you now. It's right in the opinion, if you go my way and say, let's assume SONAT is absolutely right about choice of law, absolutely right that the contract's mutual, and that Ken Petroleum governs, we don't have any evidence of their insurance coverage. That's what I'm asking. The urgency is this. If we had 2 or 3 years to finish this case here or send back the Texas points to Texarkana and then come back here, that would be fine. But this blowout happened 10 years ago, and Mr. Landry represents Lumbermans, our insurer, an insurer that you're not going to see again. Lumbermans is part of the Kemper Group. You're not going to have any more Lumbermans cases. You're not going to have any more Kemper cases. They're gone. When Osama hit the World Trade Centers, he hit Kemper's offices in New York. They got hit with a lot of World Trade Center claims. The financial turmoil that came after 9/11, which was right at the time of this judgment, destabilized their investments. Kemper is in runoff. That means they're on life support with no feeding tube. They have no premiums coming in. They're going to be gone.
What's the relevance of this?
Well, the relevance is to your discretionary decision, how do I dispose of this case? You got to decide, do I go Texas, do I go Louisiana, do I send it back to the Court of Appeals? I want you to know, we're on borrowed time, that the judgment is about to hit. It's roughly the amount of the bond. I don't know if we're here a year from now if the bond is going to be upped. And I'm gravely concerned about the consequences to CUD. Right now, we're okay. The verdict you see in the briefing was for $20 million. It is 38 now, almost 40, depending on how you calculate costs. So the analytical framework that I am putting on the table for the court to consider is basically the analytical framework that SONAT gave the Court of Appeals in its briefing, which was about this no evidence point. They said that's a Rule 279 finding because there's no jury verdict on the amount of SONAT's insurance. It's a Rule 279 finding. They're right about that. That's what it is. It's a Rule 279 finding. The problem is it's got to have evidence, and there's no evidence.
Where is CUD's senior management?
Today?
No, at the time.
The record is somewhat mixed on that. I think the nerve center of the parent company that really ran operations was in Atlanta, Georgia. It had an operational office in Houma, Louisiana. It had an office in Oklahoma.
CEOs usually don't work out of Houma, Louisiana. I mean, where was the people that ran the company?
Well, CEOs of a small underwriting bank don't. They work in Wall Street, but in the oil patch, it's not unusual. I'm taking orders from the New Orleans guys behind me who are CUD's regular trial lawyers. And I don't mean to deny that there's any CUD presence in Texas at all. To be honest, Judge, It's been several years since I've worked on the choice of law issue, and since we walked away from it, I don't know.
I mean, a company is where it is. I'm just puzzled at why there's conflicting evidence about where you're domiciled. Either.
I agree. It's a mixed bag in the record, and if this were an issue, I'd have a direct answer for you. It's frankly mixed, and Mr. Landry may know better than I am because
we really don't know where Cud was domiciled back then.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I mean, frankly, they got operations in different places, and it's blurry to me from the record, but I haven't looked at that in several years.
Can you tell me why these injury suits are, when workers get injured in Louisiana, why are they filed in Texas? Is it just my perception, or do they always get filed in Texas?
Punitives. Punitives. You can
no
get punitives here.
In Louisiana?
That's basically right. There's no punitives in Louisiana. So they're likely to come here and
again.
And
so this is going to happen again and again.
It probably will. It's happened before. This is the usual dance. Now there are offsetting considerations. The way settlement credits work in Louisiana is totally different, and it's disadvantageous. So plaintiffs have to choose. And what you see in this record is, the evolving course of multi-party, the twister game, right hand blue, and people took different positions as they went. I'm not involved in any of that on the choice of law issue.
You're not taking a position.
We're not, and we affirmatively disclaim a position. We want to be honorable to our word. I'm trying to win and have been trying to win for years on Texas law, and we ask you to simply say, all right, Zonat, we'll give you everything. You get Ken Petroleum, and it can be this. Don't look at the face of the contract. Just tell me this floating number, your insurance and my insurance, and which one's lower. The answer is there is nothing in there. It's a Rule 279 finding without evidence. And don't take the bait that you just heard a second ago about everybody knows we've got insurance. That is not true. That is absolutely not true. We don't know to this day what their insurance is. We've never seen the policies. I cited in the briefs where we asked them over and over in discovery, give us your policies. They stonewalled us. They wouldn't tell us. Their answer is, trust us. We've got insurance. We're not going to show you. And they asked for a summary judgment before trial on it. They didn't get the summary judgment. What they got was a summary judgment on other issues that said summary judgment on mutuality, on Texas law, and we're going to trial on all remaining issues. So we're thinking, okay, fine. And we didn't sandbag them. We objected when they filed that fishy affidavit saying, well, we have a lot of insurance. We objected under Part F of the summary judgment rule and said, give me your best evidence. Show me the documents. Nothing. So we go into trial thinking we're in good shape. They had plenty of notice. In the middle of trial, they got to prove our insurance, their insurance. We stipulated our insurance. When they're resting their case, there's a joint stipulation. We stipulate, here's our insurance. Our policy's in the record. If you read the clerk's record, you'll see it. Ask them on rebuttal, where's their policies? Why, 7 years later after this judgment, why do we not have any policies from them? It's not a technical gotcha argument. That's the roadmap that I'm asking the court to take to dispose of the case before our friends at Lumberman's are just gone. You don't have to do it, but that's what I'm asking for. That's what I'm trying.
Now, on choice of law.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's your argument there?
Have none at all. Have none at all. May I be excused? In fact, Your Honor, we have another argument. We have a mutuality argument. There's a third argument, which I briefed in the Court of Appeals. It is theoretically before you. I didn't brief it in the merits briefs because I can win on either of these first two points. It's a third one, and it goes back into Louisiana and Texas and the Texas Act. It's in the Court of Appeals briefing. If you choose to address all the Texas issues, you can do it. But as it says in the New Testament, whatsoever thou doest, do quickly. If the court has no more questions, I'll just sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If the court please, I had the honor of appearing before you once before in the connection with the intervention, and I thank the court for allowing me to appear here again, especially on Ash Wednesday. One thing I'd like to say quickly with respect to what Mr. Gunn says, and it ties into some of the concerns that you've expressed, Justice Brester, and you, Justice Hecht. Let there be no doubt, there's $40 million in appellate security on post in the Court of Appeal to cover this judgment. That money is Lumberman's money. It's not Cud's money. It's Lumberman's money. The indemnity claim against Cud and the indemnity judgment against Cud is insured by Lumberman's liability policy issued to Cud under the contractual liability coverages. That's never been in doubt. But the question is here, and the question that we intervened in order to preserve, because it had been presented at the district court by CUD, it was just dropped. We wanted to preserve it to ask the court, does this contract reflect the intention of the parties? Does it give the clear implication that the parties understood that the law of the state where the well was drilled would be the law that would govern the indemnity rights of the parties? I submit to you there's no question. Now, 187A2 does not require it to say Louisiana law is going to govern this.
It looks like the clear intent, this was a big, long indemnity agreement, mm-hmm. and clearly the intent of both parties was each is going to indemnify the other if their own workers got hurt.
If I may take exception with Your Honor just briefly, the intent of the parties expressed by the contract is not that you will have indemnity. With respect to Texas wells and Louisiana wells, all we can say is that the intent of the parties is that SONET needed to do what it had to do to invoke the exceptions to the anti-indemnity acts of each state.
And you wouldn't do that if the intent of the parties wasn't that everybody would have indemnity. You wouldn't care that they were struck down under Louisiana, Texas, or New Mexico law if you didn't intend to indemnify each other.
Well, there's no question about that. But this is, as Your Honors recognize, this is a contract that calls for a contractor to indemnify the owner against its own fault. Now, those contracts
are common in the oil field.
Common in the oil field.
In fact, in every contract in the oil field, right?
Common in every contract in the oil field, but those contracts are never favored unless specific stipulations in the contract are made. And in the oil field, they're never favored unless specific exceptions to the invalidation are met. Now, in Texas, those exceptions are set by the statute. In Louisiana, they're set by the case called Marcel. Now, Marcel is so frequently used and cited, it's entered the vernacular. It's like the Erie Doctrine or the Daubert analysis. It's the Marcel exception. And what it says is Louisiana has the same policy as Texas. We want to protect the oil field contractor against onerous indemnity obligations. Texas chooses to do it by requiring mutual indemnity, mutually secured by promises to obtain insurance. Louisiana will protect the contractor even more. We'll take the contractor out of the mix, and we will provide that if you, SONET, pay the premium charge to be an additional insured under CUD's liability policies, you become an insured. Now, what does a liability policy do except indemnify its insured against the consequences of its own fault?
That's not an indemnity between the parties. Does that say anything other than if you go to Louisiana, you can get insurance?
Oh, yes, it does say, because under the Louisiana Anti-Indemnity Act, you can't, an owner like CUD can't make the contractor buy its insurance for it,
but
unless it pays the
price. If SONET went over, drilled it themselves, they could get insurance if anybody got injured.
Oh, well, certainly.
And how's Marcel say anything different than that?
It doesn't say anything different than that. It simply says that the purpose of the Louisiana statute is to protect you from...
So my question is, why is that a choice? The Court of Appeals basically held that impliedly was a choice of Louisiana law.
No question.
And why is that if all that they said was that you can insure yourself when you go to Louisiana?
SONET, as it pains to say in the Texas case, has its own insurance. But it allows you to buy insurance through your contractor for whatever that premium charge might be. And the contract stipulates, SONET puts in the contract, stipulates your insurance CUD will be primary to mine. So what that means is that Lumbermans, under SONET's contract, is supposed to step into first dollar coverage and indemnify SONET against its own fault. The exact same thing the Texas law would render the judgment against CUD, but the judgment would be protected by Lumbermans. That's why it's our $40 million on deposit. The net result is the same, and the net rights to SONET are the same. And as Justice Hecht has pointed out, if SONET has complied with the Marcel exception, they have the insurance claim up and Marshall still pending. Let them demonstrate compliance with the Marshall exception, and they will get the same recovery to the same dollar limit that Texas would allow. So how is that an invalidating law? It's not. It's an exception to invalidating law, and that's what they selected. Beyond that, SONET says...
So does this case come out differently if there had been an explicit choice of Texas law?
Yes, because then you'd have Chesapeake. And while I haven't read the King versus Miller case that counsel just cited from Louisiana, if there's a stipulation in that contract and it involves two Texas companies... which is in Chesapeake, and there's a stipulation in there, all our disputes are going to be governed by Texas law, then you have a different situation.
Do you know whether Cudd was domiciled in Louisiana? Or?
My understanding, based on the affidavit of Gary Zarang, who is the man whose name is signed to this contract, is that his office, he was the author or the officer with the authority to sign this agreement and bind Cudd to its provisions. His office was at all times in Houma, Louisiana, during the pertinent times. Cudd is spread out.
You don't normally think that Exxon's domiciled everywhere or somebody from Exxon signs a contract on its behalf.
No question, and if this were Exxon, it might be a more complicated question. The named insured under the lumberman's policy is RPC Incorporated, which is domiciled in Atlanta, Georgia. Cudd happens to be a wholly owned subsidiary of that company. So Cudd had operational offices in Oklahoma as well. It had some in Texas. It had them in Louisiana. There's no question about that. Insofar as where Cudd signed this contract binding itself, Mr. Zarang's affidavit is unchallenged. He signed it in Louisiana, where it was presented. There are a couple of problems that I would also suggest with respect to this belt and suspenders approach that Sonat claims they're taking. In the first part, they say, well, this really only relates to insurance. It doesn't relate to indemnity. Well, as we've discussed in Louisiana, insurance is indemnity. It serves the same purpose. It covers the same risk. They then say, well, it's intended to guard against the possibility that somebody might sue us in Louisiana, regardless of where our well is located, because under this analysis, if we get sued in Louisiana, that sets the place of indemnity. So the well could be anywhere. This is intended to guard us against a lawsuit in Louisiana. Makes no sense, because if that's true, then in order to have a prophylactic protective effect, they've got to comply with Marcel at all their wells around the world.
Well, the reason this is in all the standard oil field contracts, it's because everybody doing business in oil field wants indemnity.
Sure.
And if we agree with the Court of Appeals and affirm the Court of Appeals that Louisiana applies, then they don't get indemnity.
Your Honor, I cannot say anything more than what I say. They get the net recovery. The only difference is whether the judgment reads Cudd Pressure Control or Lumbermen's Mutual Casualty Company. But in both events, they are indemnified against the results of their own fault. That's what a liability insurer does. All that Louisiana does is puts lumbermen's in Cudd's place, but they still get indemnity. If the court, that's why I say the court cannot get hung up, in my view, on a distinction between indemnity and insurance, because under the law of both states, the two subjects are intertwined. You can't get to indemnity in Texas unless you can show that you at least promised to get insurance. And that's the other reason that I think that, and the other point that I would like to make here, you raised the question, Justice Hecht, about the filing of declaratory judgment actions and the effect that this can have. And that's why we have cited the court to the Louisiana decisions involving exactly this same case. Okay? Because Brooks Well Servicing co-contracted with Cudd under an identical service agreement. Don't let anybody tell you it was a different contract. It's a form service agreement. It's in the record. Facing identical indemnity claims out of the same Louisiana well, which were consolidated for trial together in Marshall. An order of separate trials was issued, and Brooks took that opportunity, that breather, to go to Louisiana, to Arcadia, Louisiana, and get a declaratory judgment that Louisiana law governs the master service agreement. Now, the basis for the court's ruling, and the judgments are of the district court are in the record, is, number one, it found that this was a selection of Louisiana law, implicit. Number two, it found that Louisiana had an interest in applying its law to Louisiana wells and Louisiana blowouts in the Louisiana environment. And number three, it thought that it was following this court's precedent in Maxis. It cites to Maxis specifically. Now, we have never said that those rulings are binding on this court. But we do say that they're entitled to consideration. Because what you have here is a party that's in Marshall. Arcadia is 92 miles away. You have another party identically situated that is able to drive 92 miles and get a zero verdict while the party still in Marshall faces a $40 million exposure. It seems to me that that undermines the whole concept of uniformity and predictability and certainty of the law. And under these facts, therefore, those provisions, those decisions should be recognized.
Any questions? Thank you.
And I thank the court.
Let me start with the no evidence point on insurance, which is probably the most amazing thing I've heard from a company that paid out $128 million of insurance money because these nine workers died. for Cud now to say you didn't show you had any insurance is almost silly.
Well, did you show you had
any? Absolutely we did, Your Honor, and we did it this way. The first summary judgment that we filed, we attached an affidavit from our vice president, who was also the assistant general counsel, that delineated we had hundreds of millions of dollars worth of insurance that covered this very fact. It went unchallenged. There was no objection to it. Didn't file a single piece of paper. Absolutely nothing. Most importantly, insurance, whether or not we had it or they had it, wasn't a jury issue in this case. That was a question for the court on summary judgment, and the court ruled. Cud, as a matter of fact, filed a motion in limine, and it's at the record at 51484, that said don't get insurance before this jury. Now, counsel told you we filed motions, they said, to try to get the insurance policy. That's not true. You can search this record from top to bottom. And Cud never filed a motion at any time requesting our insurance policies. Not one single motion, certainly nothing that was ever granted, something... There was not an issue in this case whether we had insurance. We had already paid. It wasn't a question of, do you have insurance to back this up? We'd paid the money out. Those suits had gone away. That wasn't an issue, and they had fought like a tiger to make sure that insurance didn't get in front of the jury. Their motion in limine, we had a long hearing about that. And they wanted no part of insurance before this jury. It was not a jury question. And that's the only time there could be a no evidence point. The evidence was before the court, and the court ruled on it on summary judgment. We filed another partial summary judgment, and we had another affidavit that said the same thing. We had written them a letter that said, we've got all the insurance. Their policies were never produced to us. We never saw their policies. They presented a certificate of insurance. We took their word for it that they had $35 million worth of insurance. And we took their word for that. It was not an issue that was before the jury, was never going to be submitted to the jury. It simply was not an issue in the case. It was an issue on summary judgment, and on summary judgment, they didn't bat an eye and never said they don't have insurance. They knew we had insurance. We had paid. Second point about Cud. When I'm here the last time, I fought like a tiger, Justice O'Neill, to keep that opinion coming out about that intervention, and I lost 9-0. I couldn't even get a flicker. But now that that opinion's out, what that opinion said, and the Court of Appeals got it wrong. The Court of Appeals said, wait a minute, even if we wanted to do something about Cud, we can't because you reverse the case and you reverse it as the choice of law, and Cud gets the benefit, and that's not true. Because after this court's opinion in In Re Lumbermans, Lumbermans was a party. They were a party per this court's opinion. When there are two parties and one of them appeals and the other one waives that issue, they don't get the benefit under this court's precedent of what happens if you reverse as to one but not the other. So at the end of the day, even on the conflict of law, which I think probably this court is going to write on and should write on because it's the most important issue in this case, that Texas law applies in this situation when you look at the restatement. All that aside, we still get our judgment against Cud. But here's the issue about the restatement. The parties, as Justice Brister pointed out, what they really wanted and what they always want in the oil patch is they want indemnity. There's not a breath in this case that somebody said, oh, wait a minute, if it's in Louisiana, we don't want indemnity, which is what the Court of Appeals had. What the restatement says is that you ought to look at what the parties intended, and that's going to be paramount. You ought to fulfill the expectation of the parties. What did we expect? We expected to get indemnity.
Well, but I suppose you expected that each other would get the insurance required by Exhibit B, and if everybody had done that, then I suppose you'd have the same thing as indemnity.
Well, no. We did get insurance, though, Justice Heck. They got insurance to cover us. We got insurance to cover them. And the most important thing is that we knew how to write, and so did Cud. If you want Louisiana law to apply to a well in Louisiana, you know how to write that. We wrote it as to Texas, New Mexico, and wells out in the Gulf. We did not write that to Louisiana. The most important thing to remember is this is a master contract. We don't know where the wells are going to be drilled when we signed it, but we know we could choose Louisiana law for a Louisiana well, and we did not do that.
But why, if you got a policy on which you are an additional insured, doesn't that give you the same benefit as indemnity?
Well, it may, Your Honor. The problem is that we had two lawsuits. And remember, under that Rule 11 agreement, we gave up our claim against CUD because we thought their word was good. And we thought we wouldn't be faced with this conflict problem in Texarkana or here. And it turns out that maybe that wasn't quite right. And we gave that lawsuit up. And so, but the real point is, we expected there was going to be insurance, and we knew how to write, if you're in Louisiana drilling a well, it's Louisiana law, and we didn't write that. Therefore, you go through all the analysis that Justice Brister went through in Chesapeake, and when you come through that analysis, you find out that Texas law applies. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted. That concludes the arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.